meeting of Task Force on Fire Recycling. Good morning. Everybody wide awake. We have coffee in the back, hot water, some tea bags, and a pitcher of regular water, which is kind of a treat. We're here on a Friday morning. Not too early, but early. I'm Sandy Keeley Circa. I'm with Committee Services, Committee Administrator. I've been assigned to provide staffing and support for the task force. I am not the chairperson. You folks will be dictating how the task force items on to be discussed, how you want to approach the objectives, and this is our first meeting to try and get some organization behind the group. And at this point, I'd really like to go around the table and have everybody introduce themselves. I noticed that we're doing that prior to the meeting, but just, you know, we'll do it once again for the benefit of the whole group. So, whichever direction you would like to start.
I'm Don Overturf. I'm sitting in for Paul Gilson with RB Rubber Products. We're a manufacturer using Crum rubber. We recycle tires and manufacture rubber matting.
I'm Keith Dolly with Scientific Developments. We're a manufacturer of molded rubber products from recycled tires, mainly for the traffic control industry.
I'm Michael Sievers. I'm sitting in for Mark Hope today. I work for a company called URS Corporation.
I'm Tim Schimke. I'm the Director of Solid Waste for Deschutes County.
I'm Don Bryan. I'm representing the Association of Oregon Recyclers.
Tom Miles. I have a consulting design engineering firm. We've worked primarily with energy and handling and processing tires.
I'm Eric Merrill. I work with Waste Connections. Waste Connections is one of the largest collectors of recyclable materials in the Portland metro area. We also have a landfill in eastern Oregon that processes and landfills quite a few tires.
Good morning. My name is Michael Blumenthal. I represent the Rubber Manufacturers Association. Rubber Manufacturers is the trade group that represents the 7 U.S.-based tire manufacturers.
Hi, I'm Bruce Walker. I'm representing Michael Blumenthal, and I just want to make sure everyone knows that he put out an excellent overview article in last month's issue of Resource Recycling Magazine, so a good national resource to have on the committee. Actually, I work for the City of Portland Solid Waste and Recycling Program in the Office of Sustainable Development.
My name is Janet Matthews. I work for Metro, the regional government in the Portland metropolitan area. I'm the policy and program manager in Metro's Regional Environmental Management Department. We, as an agency, own two transfer stations in the metro region. We handle tens of thousands of scrap tires every year through those facilities, and we are also responsible for meeting state recovery goals in the region. So we are very concerned about this issue.
Chris Taylor, I'm the manager of the Solid Waste and Policy and Program Development section at Oregon DEQ, and the section that I manage is responsible for the waste recovery calculations every year and the policy and program development for the solid waste program, and we've administered the waste tire program in the past, and we had a more active one, and we continue to run what
I'm Brendan McCarthy with Legislative Council, just sort of sitting in on the agenda.
Thank you. We have
Sandy, could you go around the room and have other folks
our public participants, please.
I'm Kristen Mitchell with the Oregon Rail Carrie Mays, are representing West Schwab.
I'm Greg Scaley. I work for Genesis Corporation in Portland. Doug Myers, representing AOR.
Doug Riggs with PacWest. I represent Metro, and we work with the SME Builder Inspection.
Dick Gordon. I'm the Executive Director for Northwest Tire Use.
George Horry with URS Corporation.
Thank you. Welcome. Also, I caught a couple of you folks. We just have a public, not necessarily, even though the topic says for public comment to sign up, but we'd like for you to sign in anyway so we can incorporate you into all of our mailing lists and things like that, if you would. And then also, I'm going to start passing around to all the members. If you would verify your name, organization, the mailing address, phone and fax, and then put your email, because we'll probably try and do an email directory for communication, and then get that back to either myself or Patricia. And I apologize, I failed to introduce Patricia Nielsen, who is also a staff for this task force. She and I were, you know, we'll be tag team. So if you can't get a hold of me and you need something else, Patricia's the backup for that. So I'll start that around the room and definitely hope that gets completed by the end of the meeting. Also, what I'd like to say is I realize that the agenda says from 9 to 12:30, and I've mentioned to a couple of you as I've had the opportunity to speak on the phone with you, we do have the room all day. If we want to go past, if the task force wants to go, if the discussions are going well and you want to stay longer than 12:30, we have that flexibility. So, I don't think anybody really wants to go till 6 o'clock tonight, but if you want a little flex off the 12:30 adjournment time, we have that option available to us. So keep that in mind as we start discussing things and moving that we don't, you know, even though there is a timeline, there's flexibility within that. So, thanks. We were going to talk about, I hope everybody got their meeting materials. Some of the material in your packet is duplicate of that. The item that is new in this packet is Chris Taylor provided the Oregon Waste Tire Program. Also in the materials that I sent you, I gave you the statutory directive of the tire program fund, which this addresses that. We did have Ken and Chris, we're going to kind of go through this document a little bit and provide some background information so we all have that information before we start a discussion. So Ken's not here right this second, so if we can skip into Brendan. Brendan was on next on the agenda to kind of go through the directive. If we want to start walking through those one at a time, he's here as legislative counsel to provide us background as far as, you know, what specifically that limits us to or doesn't limit us to, which is just kind of a review for everybody's benefit. So if we want to start, and I brought the flip chart because I thought if we wanted to jot down notes or anything like that, we can also do that, that, you know, if we want to start outlining things or whatever. So are we okay going?
Sure.
Start with,
yep,
that? I was just going to start going through, you know, does everybody have House Bill 3909 and right there with you? Especially our, the non-member visitors. Have extra copies over here.
Okay, I think we could skip to subsection 3 of section 1, where it starts with the task force shall consider the solid waste policy established in ORS 459-015-2A in all deliberations of the task force. And because 459-015-2A is not in the legislation, I just would run through that fairly quickly. What that sets up is a priority list of things to consider when considering disposal of materials, for lack of a better better defined word, disposal, I guess, encompass it all. And that sets a sort of a six-step classification. The first would be to reduce amounts generated. The second would be to reuse materials for the reasons that they were generated. The third would be to recycle materials that can't be used. The fourth is to compost materials that can't be used or recycled. The fifth is to recover energy, so long as the energy recovery is sort of non-polluting, if those materials can't be reused, recycled, or composted. And then the final element is just plain disposal of everything else. So that's how this legislation envisions your consideration of what to do with tires, reduce, reuse, recycle, compost, energy recovery, disposal. Section 3 is the actual element of the bill that sort of says what you should do, and that is come back to the Legislative Assembly with a report by September of next year. That is going to have to be a report approved by no fewer than 9 members of the task force. I don't know how many members there are. Is that a
13. Total 13.
A significant majority. And I think it's instructive to look at what the report is supposed to contain. Recommendations on program options to improve waste tire reuse, recycling, recovery in Oregon, including identification of a funding source for any recommended program. And then we go back to what the task force shall look at under Section 1 sub 3. And I think it's important to maybe just draw some distinctions between, again, what you're supposed to study and make recommendations on and what the legislation considers that you just evaluate and analyze. I think there might be a difference between studying and recommending as opposed to evaluating and analyzing. I'll determine, but and do we need to run through all of those elements? That's the only sort of distinction I wanted to draw on that.
Are we okay?
Okay. So, questions for me. I wasn't as counsel. I did draft this piece of legislation, but I wasn't actually in the actual negotiations that pretty much came to me already nearly done in the text form. So I wasn't a party to the discussion as to why it says, say, evaluate and analyze as opposed to study and make recommendations. But I'd be happy to try and work through any questions.
Brendan, I was wondering if you could just tell us, we're supposed to have this report finished in September of next year, and it goes to an interim legislative body, right? Could you talk a little bit about the process of what happens to that report after?
What happens to the report after it goes to the body?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's up to the body. That timeline, I think, is important for the ability of the committee to perhaps put in some pre-session filing of legislation. The committee could review the report and ask me to draw up something as far as legislation is concerned. That would give me about 2.5 months to get something done for pre-session filing. Up to the committee as to what to do with that. As far as appropriate interim committee, I would assume that would mean that it's the Joint Natural Resources Committee.
And so by interim committee, just as someone who's not familiar with the process here, is that a kind of a subset of the full committee that would be present during the legislative session?
The committees are set up each session, and sometimes they can be appointed in any manner that the leadership desires in general. And the Joint Natural Resources Committee has been around for a long time. Won out that title. But the interim committee just refers to that committee that is in existence from the time the active session ends to the beginning of the next one. And then the membership would be reformulated beginning with the 2003 session. And it may indeed get a different name. Senate Committee on Trees and Agriculture. The name is not set. Statutory committee.
And also the interim committees are generally in place to fulfill the oversight mechanism that a lot of legislation directs either agencies or groups who do. So they are in place to fulfill and make sure that, you know, all of the assigned duties to the outside entities, they have an avenue to come back to, a.k.a. the interim committee, which whatever is appropriate. And that's why they kind of leave that part vague, because they do, sometimes there's separate chamber committees. You'll have a House Natural Resource and a Senate. This particular time, it's a joint, has been for a couple of interims now. But it's generally there, you know, they're in place to maintain and do the oversight mechanism that is, you know, that agencies and private folks are expected, you know, to come back to the legislature.
And I'm Ken Rocco from Legislative Wisconsin. And there's not necessarily a continuity there either, because members of the interim committee through election results or some other term limits or something like that may not be back in the following session. So as Brendan said, I think the main idea would be that that interim committee, if the task force comes up with recommendations, could introduce legislation that would be addressed by the next assembly in whatever form that is.
And on that note also, the task force, any recommendations, the pre-session filing has to have a legislator or a legislative body behind you. You, the task force, cannot just, you are not equal to a legislative committee. So you want to present your recommendations to them so that then they can sponsor that at your request. You know, so it would say joint interim committee, sponsored by the Joint Interim Committee on Natural Resources at the request of the Task Force on Fire Recycling. You need that entity. So that also plays into why you'd want to report to an interim committee, because then they, you can meet that pre-session filing, as well as they'll be familiar with the topic a little bit, even if they're returning or not returning, to then move it forward. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to go through these six directives while Brendan is still here, one at a time, and ask questions? Excuse me, seven. Is that tedious? Do we want to do that? Is it clear?
While I've read through them, I still think it helps to focus us, at least in this initial meeting, on what the legislation tells us. So I would encourage us to do that.
Okay, great. Like Brendan said, the primary directives are in Section 1, Subsection 3, beginning with Sub A, to study and make recommendations on the development of methods to increase the current waste tire reuse, recovery, and recycling rates in Oregon. Is that clear or totally foggy?
I think it's important there to note that that's one of the areas where it does say make recommendations. The other would be an F for it.
Thank you. B, to evaluate and analyze public and private sector roles in increasing waste tire reuse, recovery, and recycling rates in Oregon. And I think there's, it's, from the introductions, I think there's a good blend of private and public folks here at the table that can, you know, do a good job of coming up with this directive. C, evaluate and analyze waste tire markets and market development programs in other states and Canada, including program administration, costs, and the short-term and long-term results of such programs. D, evaluate and analyze present reuse, recycling, and energy recovery rates and market outlets for waste tires generated in Oregon. E, conduct an economic analysis using, whenever possible, existing data on tire recycling uses and markets. I'm just curious, do you folks, I'm thinking of, had some history with this. Do we have this data? Or is this something that we're going to have to start from scratch? as a group?
To me, this is the biggest question mark here, in that I'm not sure what the heck it means.
Okay. Time to talk about it.
Well, I just confer with Janet. I'm not exactly sure what that means. It doesn't exactly give us any background as far as any sort of parameters along the economic analysis. We can certainly infer from the other elements of that section what type of economic analysis we're talking about. Economic analysis of tire disposal overall, various options, reuse, recovery, recycling, and plane disposal. But again, unfortunately, I don't have any sort of background on the legislative intent on why that section was drafted the way it was. I don't know who came up with that language. It wasn't me. And I don't know if it's...
Yeah, come on up. What? Doug was nodding his head to the wall.
I might be able to shed a little light on some of this. I'm Doug Riggs. I work for Pacwest Communications. We're a government affairs and public relations firm. We lobby for Metro, so my role on this was to work with Metro on this issue. And if Sandy, if you'd like me, I can give you a little background on where the bill came from. It might be helpful to task force members and why we're here today. I'll go back to last December. We were made aware of the issue of an increasing number of illegally disposed tires in the Portland metropolitan area last fall. And by December, we had decided that it might be a good time to go back in history and look at what Oregon had done in the past. So we wanted to be working with Janet and others, dug out some material on the previous task force that was created in 1987 that recommended the program, which was a fee-based program. Went into effect in 1988 and sunset in 1992. We decided that program was a good program to start out with for a discussion point, and so we drafted a bill. The original bill, 3909, was significantly different than the one that you see today. It was longer, more detailed, and re-implemented a version of the old Oregon tire recycling program that we had back in the 80s and early 90s. We did so because we thought that was a good place to start, and also because that program worked fairly well, or at least from our perspective it did. The bill was introduced and not pre-session filed, so as a result, a copy of it wasn't available for printing purposes until late February, early March, so we got kind of a late start. We had significant ongoing discussions with both people like Metro and the recyclers and the people involved in recycling of scrap tires and the dealers, in particular Les Schwab, who is represented here today, but Mark Nelson and Bill Linden were the two people that we worked with closely. We had a long series of discussions on whether or not we ought to go forward with a program as envisioned by the original version of the bill. And the decision was made after a long, drawn-out process that for a number of factors, there was a Washington Tire Recycling Task Force in place and working to get to the point where they could issue a report. There were questions about how much money was left in the account that we had from previous years. There were questions about this very question that has been raised here. Do we have any economic analysis of what uses are available with or without incentives versus with incentives? So there were a number of unanswered questions, and so at the direction of State Representative Bruce Starr, who's the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, we undertook the process to take our bill and a competing bill that the Les Schwab people talked about and merge those. And so that's what this colorful little handout that I have left from the session was. If you're looking at your bill, what you'll see is that the yellow, I'm trying to remember who is who, but I think the yellow was the Les Schwab proposal, and the green was the Metro proposal. And so what we did is cut and paste and put them together, and so that's what you end up with. So, you know, this is kind of a little bit like sausage. My laws are like sausage, and you mix things together, and you end up with a product, and the product that we ended up with was the task force. So I think that might help. The question about that Janet has just raised, which is the question about the economic analysis, I think gets back to the point that I made a moment ago, which is there were a lot of unanswered questions during the session that kept coming up. What are the markets? What is economical for recyclers to produce without some sort of an incentive? What types of uses might be
available if we had the ability to produce or provide an incentive to a recycling company or something of that nature. And so those questions, I think, were unanswered. And there was a sense among the task force or the legislative members that maybe more than conducting an economic analysis from scratch, we could use existing data. Washington State has just recently done some work on this issue. 35 other states have fee-based recycling programs that we thought we could look to. So there may be other opportunities to use data that exists. So that's a little background on how we got here.
But in the course of developing, in the course of the previous discussions, you discovered that there wasn't any economic data that was in a coherent form that could be used for this purpose. So,
yeah, what we discovered is that by the time this really took place, we were at the end of May, and we weren't sure how much time we had left in the session. But we did realize that we probably didn't have enough time to gather all the material from a variety of sources, to put it together in any sort of a cohesive, coherent fashion that would make sense to legislators. And as a result, that was why this little element got dropped into the bill. It was actually out of, I think, the Lush-Schwab bill.
It was.
Yeah. So it was something that maybe we could ask Bill or Mark or Karen to comment on at some point in the future, but or today. But it was something that we thought was valuable. We think there is existing data out there. DEQ has some data. Metro certainly has a ton of data from the Portland area. But it wasn't all together. It wasn't in a coherent fashion. We thought that in the deliberations of the task force, that would be a good thing for us to gather, circulate to the members, and have them organize it and try to make some sense out of it.
I guess in my experience, it's important to get that kind of information out and used by the task force as early in the process as possible, because too often you wind up leaving the economic analysis to the end to try to justify what your recommendations are, and it doesn't go together very well. It really helps to get the information out early. So to the degree that we can smoke out that information and begin to organize the economic analysis, it would help, I think, in discussion.
Is this an appropriate time to get Chris or anyone else to talk about the original task force and the history of that program in order to create some context for what's ahead?
Well, could I just ask that we finish going through,
sure.
You know, this list first? And
that was E, F, and develop recommendations for removing or mitigating current or potential barriers to tire recycling, including but not limited to tax credits or other incentives, market stimulation techniques, state and local funding, fees or taxes on consumers, and public education.
That. And that's the second one where recommendation shows up.
That's right, and
right.
It provides a little bit of a game plan there for recommendations that would be given to the annual committee.
G, determine any other information needs of the task force and develop a plan for addressing those needs. In other words, probably future action. So from that, do you get a sense that you can prioritize from that and then start moving? I mean, we just had a recommendation that the economic data should probably be, you know, even though it's fourth on the list, it would be first as far as getting that part of it started.
If I could butt in before my question there. Your next item there is item four. All agencies, departments, and officers of the state are directed to assist this task force. And that makes me feel pretty good that there's thousands of state employees to help us. But as we identify these needs, I agree with Mr. Miles' comments, and I'm sure we're all going to be looking at certain things that we want. Some of it we could share who would be compiling that information, and then other would be we'd actually have to go out and collect some additional information, and who would be able to do that?
That's when we go to the agencies, departments, and offices of the state.
Okay.
I mean, even though the directive, and help me out here, says that the task force conduct an economic analysis using whenever possible, I don't think they necessarily, I know they don't mean that we can go out because we don't have any money to really go out and do that unless, and we'll probably get into that next under the waste tire fund. I mean, I think that whenever possible, if there are gaps and, you know, there's funding available or whatever, then, yeah, you could probably generate the additional information, but I think you would want to tap all of the existing state, local, other state folks to fill that so that there is no dollar amount for the task force to have to spend on that information.
But I'm kind of looking to this head table of state employees, that it's, you're the committee, our committee administrator, so do we ship information to you for compilation, or is that something?
Oh, definitely for that. Yes, I mean, and yes, I mean, whoever, if Doug and Janet and everybody has information, I definitely can be the one that then distributes it to task force members. I don't think that you need to assume that you have to expect to share it yourself. I'm the head person for that administrative end. So if there's economic data out there and we want the task force members to have it, you give it to me and I'll make sure that they get it. And the same for anything else. You know, of course, you guys can all intercommunicate on your own, but for things that for the unit of the task force, I would be the one to look at. I can go to Brendan for, you know, additional information. I mean, we all work closely together, but I'm pretty much the head person who has the responsibility of making sure that information that you give me and information that you request is then, you know, provided to you. And then, you know, that's where I go. I am then your, quote unquote, the task force representative to go to the state agencies and such. You guys don't have to do it individually. Once you want. But I don't recommend it.
Cindy, can I make a point?
Please.
In speaking with the governor's office and with the legislators that we worked with on the appointments, I know that both Bill Linden and I were looking for people to serve on the task force who might be able to direct the task force in the right direction. So we didn't have all the material. I'm sure Janet doesn't have all the material. So if there are articles or information that you think is valuable, I encourage every member of the task force to get that to Sandy and have it distributed. That'll ensure that every bit of information that needs to be considered is considered, and that's specifically why a number of you are on the task force, because of your contacts or experience or information that you might have that other people might not have.
Any other on this area? As Mr. Rocco introduced himself, he's here. We can go back now to the waste tire fund, and that is that document that was included with the meeting packet that Bill gave us, and then they have information too.
Well, Sandy asked me to get some background on the waste tire recycling account, and I realized that most of that information was that Chris Taylor knew much more than I did about that account. So Chris developed the information that has already been provided to you, a lot of detailed information on recycling and the uses of the account historically. What we discussed doing is I would give sort of a background of the account itself, and then Chris has that additional detail that you can that he's going to go over. So I prepared this brief memo for the task force just to give you an idea of the account background. As
Doug alluded to a bit. This account was originally established by the 1987 legislature when they set up the whole waste tire disposal program. That initially the account was funded with a $1 fee on replacement tire sales that dealers collected. The original law established that fee between January 1988 and June 30th, 91, and then the 91 legislature extended it through October 1st of 92. The account itself, the dollar itself, the dealers were allowed to keep 15 cents per tire for administrative costs, and then the Department of Revenue was allowed to recover its cost of collecting that dollar. Based on the numbers that Chris has, it looks like that account, or the fee, generated about $8.5 million over that period of time when the fee was in place. The original purpose in the law for that account was to clean up waste tire piles, to reimburse people for using waste tires or chips from tires, and for the Department of Environmental Quality costs of administering the program. The subsequent legislatures made changes to that, to those purposes. I think the reimbursement for using waste tires and chips was phased out by the 91 legislature. The 93 legislature made some technical changes to the account by continuously appropriating it to the department. Which this is another fund account, and those accounts need to be continuously appropriated. So that was sort of a technical change. And then the 97 legislature allowed interest to be kept in the account. And generally, accounts in the state treasury, the interest goes to the general fund unless it's specified otherwise. And so I think in this case, the 97 legislature acted to make sure the interest could be retained in the account. The use of the account right now under ORS 459775, it's, as I said, continuously appropriated to DQ, and it's for programs and activities related to waste tire storage, removal, or disposal. And I think based on Chris's numbers, right now there's expected to be about $700,000 in the account, and that has been... the account right now gets revenue from permit fees on storage and transporters of waste tires, interest, and I have the rough numbers listed here, interest on the account balance, and then any kind of cost recovery that the DQ is able to get from responsible parties on cleanup activities. And these figures are variable because you don't know how much cost recovery you're going to get during any biennium. That depends on finding responsible parties and negotiating what they need to pay back for costs for the cleanup activities. And interest earnings, as this account has been drawn down over time, interest earnings, of course, drop a little bit. The department currently uses the account, it's limited to administrative costs for processing the permit fees, and it's used for cleanup of any kind of waste tire piles that are found. The department estimates that right now they charge approximately half of FTE, and in the state system, that's a full-time equivalent position, which is one FTE is one person full-time for 24 months of work. So half of FTE is about, you know, just half of that, so, or 0.5 FTE. Mm-hmm. I think then Chris has the other detailed information was provided to you earlier in the mail out.
I guess I would just stop there and see if there's any questions. I think that the level of detail I can provide probably answers most of the big questions. I brought all the other information because I thought people might not be familiar with how the money was spent during the time when there was an active program and there was the reimbursement that was taking place. That's significantly different than how the program is operated and the way the revenues and expenditures are structured now. So I thought that historical information would be useful in terms of how that, when there was a fund in place for reimbursement, how that money was allocated and roughly where it was.
And I do have a question about the purposes for which this account could be used. I understand from your memo, Ken, how it is used, but here it says under use of the account in your memo that the statute says that it, the money is for programs and activities related to these various things. And so my question in thinking about the resources available to this task force, if we need something more extensive, my question would be, why wouldn't we qualify for some money from that account if we needed to pay a consultant or fly in some people that we wanted to hear from, for example?
So how is activities fine? I mean, I think that's what...
The one thing it does say in there now in 775B, which is what... I mean, this issue came up during the legislature, and part of the negotiated process, I think, included a bill without a fiscal impact statement of any magnitude. And so I think that needs to be recognized, that there was discussion about tapping this fund, and the idea was that that was going to create a legislative hurdle, as I recall. That speaks to that more than me. But what it does say in B is that for other programs and activities related to waste tire storage, removal, or disposal, it doesn't talk about recovery. I don't know if that's a big issue or not. But
Chris, if I could just comment on that. This was a discussion that went on and on for about a week. And I think there were two issues. One was that we thought that the account only had about $40,000 in it. I don't know why we thought that, but you know, that was one of the economic pieces of information that we knew we didn't have and we needed. So it's good to see it has a little more money in it. The second reason is exactly as Chris points out, that we, because of the timing in the session, because we had had a number of months of debate about this before we actually got down to moving the bill, we were afraid that if there was any sort of a fiscal impact on the state in any way, shape, or form, that the bill would then have to go to the Ways and Means Committee. And the Ways and Means Committee was only working on the budget at that point. So it wasn't necessarily that Bruce Starr or Deborah Crafori or any of the other state legislators didn't want to spend money on the account. They were just worried that if they spent money on the account, that would lead to a fiscal impact. Or if they specifically authorized spending money out of the account, that would lead to a fiscal impact, which would throw the bill down to the Ways and Means Committee, where it would probably get tied up in a whole bunch of debates totally unrelated to tire recycling, and nothing would happen. But I don't remember at any point, Karen, maybe you can correct me, I don't think any of us expected that there wouldn't be a fiscal impact to the state, but we assumed that the state probably had authority within its own jurisdiction without us giving them additional authority to be able to assist us in some way, shape, or form.
Well, and I think it's Chris's point about the recovery use is important, since there is legislative history that removed that kind of use of the account for those purposes. So I think that's something that would have to be looked into some more.
I'm not stating that I'm not an attorney and I haven't asked for an AG's opinion. It just struck me as something we should consider before tapping that account for that purpose. And if that becomes an issue, then it'll be either legislative committee services are weak in request.
Where exactly are you, which section are you?
459775. It's in the handout.
I mailed it to you, but it's
459775.
On the first one. Yeah, go back.
To be the last paragraph on page 545.
And this is where she... But I'm not sure where you guys are at.
I don't want to belabor this, but I would just say that our activities do relate to waste tire disposal, because we have more disposal of waste tires than we want in this state, and we are trying to, through the activities of this group, to go in more of a direction of recovery. But it clearly... I will say that when Doug talked about the impetus for this legislation, it really wasn't so much about illegal dumping of tires. It was about the drastically declining recovery rate for tires in this state and our interest in having going back up to a higher recovery level. So really disposal of tires is the reason Metro initiated the original legislation. So, again, not to belabor it, but it certainly does relate to tire disposal.
There is an alternative. I mean, if for some reason it comes back, the state cannot or does not believe that it can expend any money, like if you want to do a study, there is the option of going to the e-board and at one of the e-board meetings asking them for authority, and I can't imagine they'd say no.
And DEQ would have to do that?
Right.
So I guess what I wanted to start with is just whether there are any questions about the level of information that's been provided. Then I was just going to talk about two things in the handout that I provided. I thought, in addition to what you said, would be important. Additional information in terms of how the money was used during the period when the fees were in place. There was both cleanup and reimbursement for recovery that was taking place, and you see that information on the bottom of page one about tire cleanups. You can see how the money came in. I don't think there's a lot worth going through in a lot of detail there. In terms of how the reimbursement worked, I'm looking now on page two. I think that might be of interest to people. As you can see, there was different categories in the original legislation and the rules that describe what types of activity were eligible for reimbursement. This was part of the incentives that were designed to increase tire recovery. And you can see that a very large number of tires went to tire-derived fuel, also other, and then energy whole just means not chopped up, but also being used as fuel, manufacturing, other, and demonstration projects. So those are the broad categories of how the money was spent. And that's a summary of the 3.5 years. I didn't break it out year by year. I thought it could be a snapshot of how the money was spent when it was available. Another thing I think that's important, though, if you skip to page three, you can see that the recovery rates were indeed considered. The reason there's no, it's NA for 1992 was when the state first started keeping track of these things. We don't have records that go back farther than that. That was legislation in 91 that directed the DEQ to start tracking all these things. So that's why we don't have a historical record from previous to that year. Anyway, you can see that, I think a lot of people argue there's a cause and effect relationship here. There was a much higher recovery rate when the program was in effect than we've had in the last few years. There's a combination of things that have happened that have caused that rate to drop, but it certainly was higher in the early 90s. And as a total amount of waste in the state, waste tires are not a significant amount of waste. You can see it's the total tonnage generated is around 51,000 tons of waste tires per year, and that's we try to back out tires that are brought into the state from elsewhere. That number, at least the way we are struck the people who are reporting to us and the questions we ask, we do our best to eliminate tires that are being brought in from elsewhere, because that certainly does take place. But we ask the users and the processors for that information and try to keep those numbers out of it. So that's the Oregon generation of tires. Did I see a question over here?
You kind of stated that the high recovery rate in the early to mid-90s, it seemed like you inferred that it was partially because of the old program. However, those are all past the sunset of the old program, those years. The program sunsetted in 92 as far as any reimbursement. And still up through 96, you had a 98% recovery rate. So what... Do you have more specifics on what happened in 97?
Obviously one big thing. Let me go through the data. If you look at the tons recovered column, you'll see that 96, 97, that the tonnages have been fairly flat. The difference is the increase in the tons disposed. and that's what's causing the rate change. It's not necessarily a wholesale drop in the number or ton of the tires that are being recovered, but it's been an increase in the number of tires in the generation column, which is disposal plus plus recovery. So I guess what I would attribute that to is that the market in terms of tons of tires for tire recovery has remained fairly steady, but there's been an increase in generation. And there's several factors that and others around the room may have more detail to add to this. I'll start with what I can tell you about why we think it's increased. Variety factors, one of which is that part of this jump in generation was the cleanup of a couple of very, very, very large piles. The Les Schwab pile in Prineville is probably a prominent example of that was generating. Those were tires that were from years past that were stored in one place and then all came into the waste stream at once. So I don't know the exact heritage of every tire that's in that pile, but suffice to say that some of those tires were generated 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 7 years ago. They sat there for a period of years, and then they all came out into the disposal or recovery stream, in this case mostly disposal, at one time. So there was a big slug of tires coming out of the market. You also have... I also looked at, and maybe Michael from the national perspective can shed some light on this, but I was trying to figure out why the overall, like the baseline generation figures for Oregon seem to be a little bit higher than our population numbers would suggest. If you look at the national figures always obscure a lot of.
What page are you on now?
I'm still in the same generated tons. Okay. The national figures that are thrown around are about one tire per person per year based on Oregon's population. That would come out to something like, and based on the general standard numbers that are on your website, I think, you would come out with something more like 34,000 tons a year that you'd expect for a state with Oregon's population, and we have 51. And a couple of reasons I would postulate, and again, I don't have the definitive answer, and we've got a lot of expertise in the room about tires, so maybe somebody can fill this out a little bit more thoroughly, but Oregon's car registration numbers are higher than the national average. There are more cars per person registered here. If you take cars and trucks together, especially trucks, we have a much higher than, I think it's 42% higher than the national average of truck registrations in Oregon. So perhaps that has something to do with it. Another question that I would pose to the industry representatives are perhaps the increase in SUVs. They have larger tires than small compact cars. The average weight of a passenger car, since passenger cars are now 40% light trucks and SUVs, my presumption is those tires weigh a little bit more than the tires you put on a Honda Civic. I don't know, but I'm not a tire dealer, but that seems like that's probably the case. That's probably making the tonnage figure a little bit higher. And a minor blip in that would be the Firestone recall in the last year, but I don't think that's huge. So those are the factors that I would offer that I'm aware of, and maybe others in the room can help elaborate or add some further detail to that.
One more clarification. So in your generated tons, the Les Schwab landfill tires that are now being taken care of or handled differently are part of this generated tons?
The generated tons comes from two places. It's the number of tires that are processed for energy or recycling in a given year, and the number that are actually put into the ground for disposal in a given year. So if they sit in a tire pile in storage, they're not counted in either. They only show up in the numbers when they either go to get recycled, burn for energy, or dispose in a landfill. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So all the ones that were sitting in abandoned piles all over the state before we had a tire program, before local governments in the state were out there doing something about it, those weren't in any numbers. Is that clear? I'm sorry, there's a lot of detail here. I just want to make sure it makes sense.
Sandy, if I might, and Chris, I think one of the reasons that, and we had testimony on this during the session, if you turn back to page 2, you'll see that this program had created an incentive for tire derived fuel, and the major company that was taking advantage of that incentive at the time was Potlatch up in Lewiston, Idaho, and they were fueling their plant in Lewiston with tire derived fuel generated largely by the Oregon Tire Recycling Program. So when Keith points out that in 92, we don't have a number here on page 3, but the recycling rate was 96, 97, 98, 98%. That was high even after the program expired because we created the incentive which got Potlatch in the first place to start using tire derived fuel. What I was told by the Potlatch people who I talked to was that the Washington Department of Ecology in the mid-90s came and said you're producing too much effluent into the air, that's probably the wrong word, but too much emissions into the air, you need to install scrubbers. At the very same time, a natural gas pipeline is being installed right next to their doorstep, and they thought, gosh, you know, we can save money by switching to natural gas. The tire-derived fuel, even now that the program has expired, is not as cheap as it was. Therefore, we can go ahead and make a change. And so as a result, you see that the beginning of the fall-off from 96 to 97, from 98% to 39%, has continued to fall since then. But I think a large part of that was the fact that the program had created a large incentive for tire-derived fuel when that incentive went away. And our feeling during the session was, since there was no body or no group or no board to be aware of the fact that it was going away and to say, well, we need to create another incentive for the tires to go someplace else, the rate of recovery just fell without any opportunity to extend it or expand it to a different area.
Where was the potlatch? No.
I think it was in Lewiston. I know it's in Lewiston. I have.
And you said that Washington DOE came to and said their emissions were too high?
Yeah, Washington Department of Ecology, apparently, I don't know if it was MOTCA or one of the other state laws that went into effect, was requiring industrial emissions to be reduced. And the story I was told during the session was that they would have had to install new or additional scrubbers at a significant cost, and they figured that it would be cheaper for them to switch to a natural gas fuel at the time than to install the scrubbers and continue to use the tire direct fuel.
I'm not sure it's necessarily applicable, but how is it that Washington could reach into Idaho?
Because Lewiston is Lewiston, Clarkston, Snake River is the boundary. So Lewiston is right on the boundary of the Idaho or Washington line.
And I actually think that, if I recall correctly, Potlatch is based in Idaho but has facilities on both sides of the river.
Yep.
So it may have been that their tire derived fuel is being used in their element of the plant that was on the Washington state side. That may have been.
My understanding was that the EPA came to that plant and said that they were in violation of PSD, prevention of significant deterioration. And they had to go back and get re-permitted under a PSD permit. And rather than go through that pain, they dropped using tires, which was interesting because the year before, the Department of Energy gave them an award for the use of tire-derived fuel as a technology. I only work in Washington. I can't why things happen. But that was my basic bottom line. Saying just stop using tires. And it is common today that a lot of mills are going to natural gas rather than go through Title V or PSD or NSR, any of these new these updated air permit requirements. They're just going to natural gas. So it's not just because of tires. It's because of a lot of the Clean Air Act requirements. Mills are just trying to find the simplest way of dealing with this, so it's not tires per se.
Chris, did Neshwa pile up then take care of the stuff?
Well, I guess my understanding is that there's no significant historic stockpile. I mean, there's probably tires that they generate a lot of tires, so I bet there's tires still there, but there's not a historic stockpile.
I mean, we're not aware of any other large historic
thanks for asking that piece. Because I talked to Ken about this last night in terms of the revenue and expenditure estimates. I pointed out that compared to any other budget that I'm responsible for managing, this one is really a bit of guesswork because if we knew of any other big orphan piles out there, we'd be out there dealing with them. But we do, I mean, as you probably know, Tim, there's a lot of parts of the state that are sparsely populated that things can sit out there for a while before somebody finds them. But I don't think there's any mammoth piles. I think we know about those. I think if there are any other tire piles out there, they're small ones on, you know, Forest Service property.
So these 2,000 numbers are probably very representative of what we could see, you know, in the next few years.
That's what I would say. I mean, again, it's represented from Les Schwab as different information or Dick about that. There's, I think, all the large historic piles have been specifically. Yeah, that's my understanding. So, I would anticipate that 51,000 number is more or less the baseline. And maybe someone else on the fire sheet can tell. As I understand, the Firestone recall was more media recall than it was a big increase in the number.
Yeah, the first recall was a year and a half ago, and that was 6 million tires. and that was across the U.S., but the bulk of those tires were in Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. So it really didn't have that much of an impact up here. They did clean all those tires up. They took them, they actually spent more to get those tires cleaned up, and actually they went into a market, and then those tires were landfilled or stockpiled. So that was the Firestone recall. This year, the Ford Motor Company on its own unilaterally decided to recall up to 13 million scrap tires that were made mostly by Firestone. A few others were in there. But they did that on their own volition. Quite honestly, there were not 13 million. They were going back to 92, and the average life of a tire is on the high side is probably 4 years. Most people don't take care of them, so let's say they're about 3 years life on them. So they really only had to go back to like 97, 98, and there probably were a lot less than 13 million. And there was some overlap between that 13 million and the first 6 million. So Ford has never come out and really said how many they've actually taken in this second recall, but I doubt if it's anywhere over a couple, 3 million things.
So I don't think that's significant. I just want to address it. People, I know a lot of people asked us about that.
When was the historical Lechwab tire pile finished, or pretty much? I mean, you say it's almost gone. Has it been almost gone?
No, because the pile is gone, Lechwab is going to always have tires at the facility, and then they get trucks periodically where the final destination. But in terms of the product you're talking about in the mid-90s, that was a complete cleanup.
That,
as far as the information I have,
yeah.
When I think
that
there's still some more than that.
So it's
by 99,
I think
it was.
By 99?
Information, yeah. And you can see that pretty clearly in the numbers. And the monofill in Cook County that takes monofills, I believe, opened in 97. So those are the pieces that I thought were most, that shed the most additional light on what I think the summary that Ken provided is the most salient points. I did want to just call your attention to two other quick things. I have one other sheet that if people want it, I can pass around. If you're interested, I gave an example of some of the uses of the funds in the past, in recent years, in terms of some of the cleanups that we've done. If people want that information, I can pass that around just to give a sense of where the money's going today. But I think Ken basically addressed it, that there's a small amount of that time, of that 0.5 FTE is really a little teeny piece of a bunch of DEQ staff that add up to 0.5 FTE. There's one administrative person who does all the administration for the waste tire carrier and storage permits. It's not half of her time, it's a smaller percent. And then the staff mostly out in the field that are involved with arranging the logistics and scheduling and executing cleanups. And then we have some charges to the Department of Justice to go after those tire responsible parties for the tire files. So that's essentially where the money is going now. And our projections are, as I said, very variable depending on what assumptions you make about whether there's going to be another cleanup that we have to do and whether we're going to be successful going after the owner of that file or the property owner. Any other questions I can answer?
What's the quantity of illegal disposal relative to, say, this 50,000 ton generated number?
Well, obviously, I mean, illegal disposal is not something that can be very precisely measured because it's being dumped somewhere. And if we, it's only the portion that gets cleaned up that you really have any knowledge of. I would actually defer to the local government representatives in the room because they're actually the ones that deal with most of the illegal disposal. It's on a smaller scale. We only get involved when it's a really large pile. It's going to be a major one-time financial hit for local governments. But they have faith. I think Tim has experience with that, and I know Janet does, so I might defer to them.
And I couldn't give you a figure. I mean, huge areas of public land out here near the population centers. It's a serious problem. There's a significant amount of those kind of we did a free tire disposal day, one day on a Saturday, processed 1,000 vehicles and 10,000 tires in one day. And I know that did not include any significant effort by, say, BLM or the Forest Service to go out there after tires. This is stuff that people are bringing in because they've had it, you know, hanging out in the backyard or, you know, on their property. So I can't give you a, we feel that of the this many thousands of tires that we do deal with, that's the percentage that we know are out there on the public land. We just don't know, but certainly it is significant.
In addition to that, I would say that, I mean, I spend a lot of time out in the woods, and there's no large piles of these things. They are scattered all over in any public land area. You can, anywhere there's a road and somebody can just dump them off, that's where they end up. But you can have a pile a mile down the road and another three or four tires up the road in, you know, various locations. So it's all over.
And I would contribute that, you know, I don't have the number off the top of my head, as a percentage of overall scrap tires generated, I'm sure those that are illegally disposed are small as a percentage. But our enforcement people in Metro's regulatory program tell me that not only is it persistent, these amounts of tires that we find, but it is growing in the last year, the numbers, for whatever reason. There are a growing number in the last year. I had another question, Chris. Michael. I'm sorry. Michael, no, Michael, you were waiting from earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to go back to that. Chris, can you talk at all about the history of the original program? Was there any kind of an analysis done to reflect on its success or failure beyond the numbers?
I wish I could tell you more about it. This program was phased out prior to my tenure with BBQ, and if you want some more of the I was assuming people were going to want sort of the statistical background. If you want more of the narrative piece, there are people on my staff who were involved in the early days. I could certainly get more information.
Well, the reason I'm asking is that I think it might be helpful for the task force to at least have a bit of that history to look at what the issues were that were considered 15 years ago as it moves forward, because I know from my work with Mark that, to borrow a phrase from Yogi Berra, deja vu all over again to an extent. So I think it's going to help to frame the, you know, what the task force is going to try to do.
I would say, though, Michael, and while that might be useful, it's pretty clear that now we are in a different situation than we were then, where we have those big stockpiles cleaned up.
I'm not saying
and we have
the same.
Right. We have a good collection infrastructure.
Right. And I know that, too. But yeah. I think that it might help to be able to look back a little bit and understand what was going on at that point.
Yeah, I had some material which we dug up during the research phase, including some material from the bill was House Bill 2022, passed in the 1987 legislature. The main purpose was there were a series of tire fires throughout the, I think Oregon had one near McMinnville, is what someone had indicated. So there was that incentive. There was also an incentive to make sure that the buildup of these tire dumps did not occur again. And it was a temporary program that was extended. I think, Ken, you mentioned that. And I can get you some background material, but there was significant debate and testimony on this. The bill that came together, which implemented a fee-based program, was supported by a wide variety of interests, including the dealers, the recyclers, the public entities. I've got a list from Senator Wayne Fawbush, which some of you may remember, Wayne Fawbush, from many years ago. He was the guy who brought everyone together in kind of a task force type of environment. But during the session, the task force came up with this bill, and I can get you some material that I can get through Sandy, and she can distribute it. That might be helpful, because it talked about goals and objectives and some of the material that they had.
I think it would be.
So I had one other question for you, Chris, while you're here. Looking at what this task force is supposed to do, one of the things is that we're supposed to evaluate and analyze, I think, methods to increase reuse, recovery, and recycling. And so the question that comes to mind for me is, I believe the state has some pretty definitive categories for what's encompassed in reuse, recycling, and recovery, and what is not. I mean, what is not considered recovery or recycling of scrap tires? And I'm hopeful that just to guide us, that we can get that information from DEQ if indeed those definitions are in existence. What is, what isn't recovery, recycling?
Well, yeah, and I think, in fact, that information, well, it's not in the piece that Sandy gave you, but it's in 459. I can make sure that people get copies of that. From Sandy, I can direct her to that part of the statute. But, yeah, there are definitions of what those things mean. And the hierarchy, what we in the solid waste business refer to, what Brandon was referring to, we usually call the solid waste management hierarchy. And that's consistent. Nothing that Oregon's not the only part from the only state that has that hierarchy as an official policy. That's a fairly standard hierarchy that's been adopted by many states, local governments, and EPA has a version that's quite similar. And I guess the connection with Jan's saying is that, yes, the state defines reuse as using something again for the same original purpose. I guess the only example I know of tires would be retreading tires that count as reuse. And recycling would be physically transferring material into a new product, but through a transformation that renders it, I believe, you know, you can't recognize its original form, something to that effect. So you're physically or chemically breaking the product down and then making a new product out of it. That would count as recovery. Composting, I'm not aware of any tire composting, so I don't know, we spent a lot of time thinking about that. That's usually organic, debris, and food, and things like that. And then energy recovery is using the material as a substitute for some other fuel. And I don't know what other disposal is burying it or burning it without energy recovery. So a mass burn incinerator like the one they have in Coos Bay is the only one here in the state of Oregon. Coos County uses an incinerator that doesn't have energy recovery. It's just incineration. That would not count as energy recovery. But if it was used as a substitute, say, for hot fuel at a paper mill or something like that you've heard about, those uses, that would count as energy recovery, which, again, does come below. It's the last step before disposal, but preferable to disposal.
Let me ask you particularly about daily cover at landfills. Does that fall anywhere in a recovery definition?
That comes under the title of beneficial use, but beneficial use isn't part of the waste management hierarchy. That has to do with the allowed uses of what you can do with it at landfill and the fees, the disposal fees that are levied on it. That wouldn't be included in their calculated recovery rates for the state. Any other questions I can answer? I think those were the main points that I wanted to make, and obviously if there's more questions to come, but yeah. One thing I would like to ask of the other members, I assume that, since I haven't heard the contrary, if those others at the table who are involved in this have other, you know, data or information about this, the numbers generated, recovered, we do go to considerable lengths to try to get the most accurate information. But if at any point you have other information to offer, additional details or clarification, you know, we'd certainly like to improve the quality of the data that we keep for the department services, but also for this task force. If people have other information they can offer, I'd be interested.
I have one question. Could you go over where the current markets are for Oregon Tires?
Current markets for Oregon Tires? Well, I think most of them are in this room, so maybe I'd let them speak for themselves. I mean, I think that the people that are processing and either disposing of or recycling tires are such good people, so rather than presume to speak for them, I'd rather let them talk about their own. I mean, if they can explain more about it than I can.
And maybe before we go down that road, do you folks want to take a quick break?
That's great.
I see nods heading. Thank you.
Someplace buried in my files, a fleet legislative history from 1987. Maybe down in the basement. But
you know, right. The point is only that programs get created,
yeah,
and they sunset.
Right.
And there's no...